What have you got there as a paper?
The chaplain.
So,
if you want to get one of this.
So,
let's start from scratch as if we haven't met before.
Tell me your name.
My name is Renford Maddox.
And you are what?
I am the chaplain of the Kirchner Services.
When did you become chaplain of the Kirchner
Services? Approximately 10 years ago.
What were you doing before that?
I've been a Baptist minister. I've served as pastor for three different circuits of churches on various occasions, one in St. Anne, St. Mary, and Kingston. So I am still a Baptist minister and secondment from the Jamaica Baptist Union.
What are your duties as chaplain of the collection system?
Well, I'm primarily responsible for the spiritual welfare of the entire department. This includes some roughly 4,000 units on board, as well as a staff of over 2,100, and to some extent members of their family. But the chaplaincy networks with all the other auxiliaries of the department.
Were you a chaplain when Prescott became commissioner?
Yes, a little before. A
little before?
Yes.
So tell me what the system was like before he came in, and tell me how it changed just when he got here.
Interestingly enough, I did my doctoral thesis. I wrote my doctoral thesis on the role of the chaplaincy in the process of rehabilitation. And what I discovered is that, like other places, the institution was a place of punishment. These were people were warehoused. In fact, this is a concept that we haven't completely departed from. Just 2 years ago, I read of a judge saying that they had to lock the door and fling away the key. The situation was bad. Overcrowding was at its worst. Granted that there were some people, especially some of the commissioners, who since 1975 have been trying to advocate humanization of our structures. But these were token expressions of rehabilitation. What Commissioner has done is that he has succeeded in making rehabilitation the policy of the Department of Correctional Services. And this is what has been accepted and what we're working towards. Still have a far way to go. I remember the first day I came to Tower Street, which is one of our maximum correctional centers. I was invited by the then commissioner to have a look at the institutions so as to decide whether or not I would care to accept the post as chaplain. I had no interest in a chaplain's post at the time. I had no idea what the handbars were like. I remember when the doors of Tower Street were opened, some 1,700 men were incarcerated that day, and I saw clothes hung out all about the place. Then I heard a song coming from everywhere in the institution. People were just bawling out my name, because you see, where I was pastor in Jonestown, it is one of the world's leading ghettos, and so quite a number of my parishioners were actually there and recognized me. The culture of the place was such that once they called their name, everybody just hung into it. And what I heard coming through was, Matthew, this was not said in so many words, but my interpretation of that call was, where have you been all this while, and we have been down here waiting on you? And it didn't take me 10 seconds to make up the mind to accept the post as chaplain. The situation, I would compare it with what Ezekiel saw in Ezekiel chapter 37, the Valley of Bones. But there have been some rumbling sounds, and I see some progress being made.
At what point in the commissioner's tenure, in your judgment, was he in most danger of failing?
He had never been in danger of failing, because he's the kind of person who operates with an invincible determination, and he became totally committed to rehabilitation as soon as he reached the department. And as far as he's concerned, even if it is one person who is rehabilitated, he would still see his mission as a success. So I think he would be better able to speak for himself. But I don't think he had ever been in danger of failing. Granted that, you know, to many people, he has been a disappointment so far, that coming from the army, one expected him to adopt a kind of draconian measure and to put the inmates in their place. But whereas he's concerned about security, he's concerned about security insofar as it is necessary for rehabilitation.
Who would you say has been his most important convert?
The leadership of the department.
And has he converted the leadership of the department?
Yes, the leadership is totally committed to rehabilitation. Having said that, I hope you don't hear me saying that the people on the ground are not committed to it. Far from it. Yeah. Of course, there are those who are coming gradually. But there are lots of people out there who are sold on rehabilitation. I should say, though, that we started working on it before it came. In fact, I remember the first sermon I preached when I became chaplain had to do with rehabilitation, and I've preached on 9 different occasions launching of correctional services in Mexico. And with the exception of one of these messages, the focus of all of them has been on rehabilitation.
When did you meet Desmond Green?
I met Desmond Green, I don't remember the exact year, but about 3-4 years ago. But I met him as soon as I started working with the department.
And what's your attitude towards Reverence for Life as a specific part of this rehabilitation movement?
I think there are aspects of the Reverence for Life program which tend to be pretty vague and nebulous. But Desmond Green himself stands as a startling contrast to that section of the staff which tends to be draconian and stereotype. And Desmond tends to go overboard. For example, he doesn't talk about inmates. He talks about teammates and so forth. And he left Desmond, there would be no restriction on the movement of any inmate in the institution. That is not realistic given the situation we are dealing with. But I think that kind of extreme approach has served as a balance, and we are arriving at the truth, which is somewhere in between. But I would say that Esmond and the Reverence for Life program really made a significant contribution in moving the rehabilitation program forward.
Kingston has a national, international reputation as a place that the home of political gangs.
Yes.
To what extent does the gang environment on the outside penetrate to the inside?
I would say that the gangs are the evidence is that people still have their loyalty. But I don't know whether or not it's because the officers have been so vigilant. But the gang operation in the institutions are not half as dominant as that they are in the wider society. They have not been allowed to. But to say that once they come into the institution, there is no gang, that would be very far away from the truth.
May I just ask one thing though? You're talking about gang, maybe I hear a negative connotation when you talk about gang in the community.
Yes.
But isn't a team in a way a gang? And don't they form teams to do positive things, or gangs to do positive things in the institution? Could you translate the concept?
Well, it's just a matter of semantics. It's a matter of the meaning of the word. Is it the speaker?
Right.
So it depends on how you look at it. But for the average person, the gang is usually associated with the gun.
Now, there was a time when a significant number of prisoners who had been on death row,
yes,
had their sentences commuted,
yes,
and so went from being in isolation,
yes,
out into the general population.
Yes. Yes.
Describe that. That seems like it must be an amazing time.
I was here when that took place. I think it's about 11 years now. They have not had any execution, any hanging in any of our institutions. And I remember very well a group of 22 inmates had their sentence being committed to non-capital murder. And part of my role was to counsel with them as they were to be reintegrated into the general community life and get with them by the chapel. Those were, the death row is located at St. Catherine Adult Correctional Center, which is one of our maximum correctional institutions. And they were transferred to Tower Street. So we met by the chapel. There was a superintendent there. There was a warden there. And both of them were called away. There was some urgent need for them. So can you imagine? Excuse me. Alone. You know, originally I intended to speak to them from the lectern. But I just devised a strategy. And moved the chair at the lectern and went and sat beside them. I said, look here, I don't have any address to give you. I don't have anything to say to you. You are the ones who are coming from off death row. Now you are not only off death row, but you are in a different institution. How does it feel to be off death row? I remember clearly one inmate saying to me, sir, there is no word in the human language to describe how we feel, or how I feel. Because day after day, you see people digging graves around you, and you know that the graves they are digging are yours. And now, to be out of that situation, there is no word that can describe how I feel. I remember that very clearly. But it's quite an experience.
It must have been an extraordinary time in the general population to suddenly have a significant number of fearsome people released into the population and bucking for pecking order and status and respect.
Yes. Yes. It is.
so now?
If I'm not sharing another experience, I went by impression out of operation at the same time. I just took up the books with the names of those who are on this book. I sent a call to his inmate. I didn't know him, but I saw his name there. When he came, you could hear him on top of his voice. Why are you sending me? Call me. Everybody come to this place. Call me, call me, call me, call me. Don't call me for that. In other words, why are you calling me? What are you calling me? So I said, hear me now. I don't come to call you. I don't seem to call you for anything special. But one would have thought that if somebody lived in a place like this, you might just want to tell somebody what is happening to you and what it is like in here. So I don't send to call you to tell you anything. I just want to find out if you have anything to tell. And he said, oh. And he sat and we rapped. And somewhere along the line I said something about prayer. He said, prayer? Don't worry, mention that to me. Because I remember when I came in, there was an inmate who talked about prayer and talked about Jesus. And all he did was go and preach to the other inmates and told us how Jesus was going to save us. And when the hanging started, he was left for the church. So don't worry, tell me about prayer. I said, I believe every word that you are saying. But if I were your publisher with the rope brushing against me, I would still have what? Woman's a little prayer. It may work or it may not work. If it works, you have everything to give. If it doesn't, then you have nothing to lose. He said, if you are praying, pray. Bring me into it. So I said, okay, I won't pray, and I didn't. But I found it very instructive. When I was leaving, I heard him calling from upstairs. I didn't even know that he knew my name. Reverend Mariette. The next time I met him, he was one of those whose sentence was commuted, and I was counseling with them for being integrated in general institution life.
What do you think the story is behind this escape that's just happened now?
I don't think there's any special story. I think there are those of us who tend to overestimate how these inmates feel about going out there. There are those of us who tend to feel that once you allow them to go there, then this is going to automatically change them. I don't subscribe to that view. I think that many of those who are going out are changed, and that the exposure will have some positive effects on them. But I think that even among the church people going out there to see, you have some who are looking for a first opportunity to escape. And so this fellow is a strategist. I am learning that this is not the first time he has been out there. He has been out there twice. He didn't escape the first or the second time. But my guess is that he was studying the situation. So I am not sure there's any special story behind it. All that happens is that he gets some special publicity.
What advice do you have for us in terms of the different singing groups? Which is the group, if you had to pick one, that you wanted to make sure we listen to?
If I were a selfish person, I would say pick Voices of Christ from St. Catherine out of Christ Love Center.
Voices of Christ.
Yes, you see, that's what of the institution that I'm responsible for. But if I want to be objective and honest, I would say go for the Sons of God at South Carolina.
Sons of God at South Carolina.
Yes.
Reverend, it's a pleasure to
speak with you.
Thank you. We'll have opportunity again to speak.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I want a copy of the dissertation.
Let me tell you a tragedy. I had just one copy. Columbia Theological Seminary in conjunction with the United Theological College of Western. One of the, luminaries, former Minister of National Security and Justice, was going abroad and wanted some information on the chaplains. So I said, look, all of this come back. And he has in Spain and just can't find it.
We were in contact with our theological school.
Yes, so I would hope. Yeah. I have to check to see if they have a copy. Yes.
Good.